Out here, if you're doing nothing, you're doing everything right. Though on a cruise with Norwegian, even if you're doing nothing, you're still basking in the warm sun, enjoying the peaceful ocean waves, you're breathing. Don't forget about breathing. Definitely need to be breathing. So you get to do nothing, or everything, but you still need to be breathing. It's like really important.
Experience the difference with cruises to Alaska, the Caribbean, and Europe. Norwegian Cruise Line. It's different out here. Visit NCL.com, call your travel advisor, or 1-888-NCL-CRUISE. Norwegian Cruise Line ships registry with Bahamas and USA.
Football on off the ball.
Regardless of the Declan Rice handball, which was a handball, it was handball, no matter what you say or any way you look at it, it's a foul because he's got his arm around the guy's shoulders. He's dragging the guy down, he can't jump. VAR should be checking that.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Yeah, I think it's a big, big moment.
The League of Ireland is live and exclusive again this Friday on Off The Ball.
There's still time here.
Last Friday night, the champions were battered by arch-rivals Bohemians.
Rose haven't been good enough.
It was a late, late show, and to whom it may concern, Bradley's boys made sure this week's opponents were duly warned.
Aaron Green has made it 3-2, a game that was over.
Pretenders to the throne, Derry City came from behind to beat Waterford's with a couple of late ones themselves, and talisman Mikey Duffy struck again.
It's picked up by Mikey Duffy.
On Friday, the Candy Stripes come to Dublin, looking to throw the gauntlet down to Rovers. Shamrock Rovers versus Derry City at Tallaght Stadium is live and exclusive on Off The Ball from 7 this Friday on News Talk and the Go Loud app.
League of Ireland on Off The Ball.
Hello and welcome to Off The Ball. I'm Eve Conway and I'm joined in studio here by Ciara Tracy. And we are going to be previewing the new Formula One season, which begins this week in Australia. Many F1 pundits have been calling it the biggest regulation overhaul we've ever had in Formula One. So there's so much to talk about. People are getting excited. Ciara, how are you feeling ahead of this new season?
I literally cannot wait for it to be Sunday. I was saying earlier, I cannot wait to be waking up at 4 a.m. and I've never said that in my life. So I'm so looking forward to it. We have so much to kind of get through. I don't think we'll have any true understanding of what's going to happen until lights go out.
Yes.
And yeah, we're going to have super fast cars, faster than ever before, I'd say, and a lot of excitement building.
Because I feel like when you watch, and when you're a big F1 fan and you're kind of tuning in or keeping track with preseason testing, a lot of it can be speculation, you know, what teams are sandbagging, what teams are kind of overperforming, what teams will rock up at Albert Park on Sunday and sort of fail, comparatively speaking. It's one of the more exciting times of the F1 calendar. That, again, as you said, I'm excited to be getting up early in the morning, which I never usually am. And I'm getting used to Australia being the first race back again. I think it was the same last year. I personally love it.
Yeah.
The first few races are going to be these really early starts. Your Australias, your Chinas, your Japans.
Completely. And completely sets the kind of mood as well, psychologically. Mm. We know that sometimes the fast race can make or break a few of the key players. There are so many names being thrown out and so many teams being, you know, picked. We have George Russell as the bookies' favourite and a lot of people going off that. But then there's a lot of excitement around Ferrari as well this year and a lot of optimism, which we always say, which I don't know, Pete is off so quickly as well. It'd be interesting to see if they can rise to that occasion or if we'll be seeing a similar Red Bull McLaren domination.
That's kind of what I want to talk about in this section here, because we're going to hear from Rebecca Clancy later on in this episode, kind of speaking to us about the regulation changes, about what we can expect. But considering this is our season preview and we're going to be talking about the F1 season every race week throughout the year, there's an opportunity for us to sort of embarrass ourselves,
always.
I guess. give our predictions. So I've written down kind of my top five for the Drivers' Championship, but also the Constructors' Championship.
Okay.
I change this a lot.
Yeah.
So I think I changed it even since I was mentioning it to you. For the Constructors, I've gone with this order. I've gone with McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, and then Haas.
Okay.
As my sort of, I believe in the power of this Ferrari power unit.
Okay.
I don't believe that Mercedes have two drivers who are experienced enough to carry them to a Constructor Championship just yet. I think McLaren are more experienced. But I feel wrong putting Red Bull in fourth. It feels ridiculous and stupid.
I don't, well, I wouldn't say that, because I actually have a lot of hope in Isaac Hadjar, who's coming in after a really great rookie season last year. Yes. I know everyone talks about this cursed second seat when it comes to Red Bull, but I think he's got a lot of confidence. And I know this, again, we could be just saying the same thing that we always say, but I really do think he has a lot. He's so young, he's so talented. And I don't think he's going to let the pressure get to him like it has with other second seat Red Bull drivers.
He was my rookie of the year last season. And I feel like for so many drivers who make that move from, I was about to say Toro Rosso, but we're many years yeah. removed from that, from Racing Bulls up to Red Bull, maybe they've been there for a few years, someone like Yuki Tsunoda, and the pressure is immense.
I know.
Moving in just your second season, ironically, the pressure is probably lessened.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, maybe Red Bull can... I was about to say surprise us, so maybe they can continue their, yeah, their domination. And then for the Drivers' Championship, I have gone with the bookies' favourite. I think George Russell, this could be his year, which I'd love to see. I'm no particular mad fan of Russell, but seeing Norris win that title last year, it's that sort of era.
It is.
We saw them all come up.
Yeah, exactly.
It would be great to see him. And I think he's earned it. He's led this Mercedes team now since Hamilton's departure, and I think he's done it very well.
100%. He's really come into that poster boy effect for Mercedes now, and he seems to be taking Antonelli under his wing really fantastically. So I could see that quite easily. But I think he might buckle under all this pressure.
Ooh, I think that's a fair point, because my next two are drivers who have been in a championship battle. I have Norris in P2 and then Piastri, followed by Verstappen and Leclerc, because I don't fully trust Ferrari and all the hype. But I still do think Leclerc is going to have a good season. He seems to be in a good space with the car right now from what we've seen in testing. He's so comfortable in that team. He's been there for so long. You get the sense that if it doesn't work out this year, next season could be a question mark. But as for right now, this is where he's at.
100%. And this is actually another thing that I'd love to get into with Rebecca as well. This idea of, we have some new buttons coming into play with the new regulations. Mm. So drivers will be able to overtake rather than DRS. And we have a boost button and a recharge button. So it seems like a lot of the control is going to be in the driver's hands quite literally this season. And an issue that comes up time and time again for Ferrari is the team strategy.
Yes.
So if they're able to maybe maneuver the car and their kind of own race strategy in their own, you know, in their own hands, we could see a lot more success for Ferrari. And I would love to see it. It's been a long time coming. And I really think, you know, Lewis shook the sporting world when he made that move from Mercedes to Ferrari, and he hasn't had a lot to show for it. So I really hope he gets at least a race win this year. I know it's like the bars on the floor for the best champion, you know, in sporting history. So we'll wait and see. But I would like to think now this will bring more autonomy for the Ferrari lads.
So are you betting on a Charles Leclerc World Drivers' Championship?
No, I still think we should be walking before we run. I'd like to see them maybe come second or probably third in constructors, if I'm being completely honest. I do think we'll be seeing Piastri maybe win his first championship.
Now that I would love.
I would love to see it, and it'd be really interesting to see how Papaya Rules takes form this season off the back of Lando winning his first huge win. So I'll see about that. I think George could come in second, and I think everyone's kind of forgetting Max Verstappen in all of this as well.
Yeah, I remember I was doing my predictions, and I had Leclerc in fourth before I even remembered Verstappen existed.
Honestly,
which is ridiculous, because we've seen him across a couple of different eras now. We've seen him consistently manage to make that car work.
He almost won the championship last season. I think he really did come from behind there, and he was incredible to watch. And I think, you know, never count him out. Everyone is focusing on George and Ferrari, I feel, and everyone's forgetting who's the most threatening, you know, driver on that grid, and it is Max Verstappen.
I don't know if you can call a four-time world champion a dark horse, but I feel like that's where we're at.
Genuinely. Yes. But for constructors too, someone, I think I would swap out Haas from your lineup and put Williams in.
Okay. I need to tell everyone you said that, because my friends are feeling very despairing about Williams, but this
I
is good. This is some optimism.
So. I think we have an exciting time now for Williams. I think with Albon and Sainz, they're two seasoned drivers, and they really work together, like, you know, both outside of the racing and on the track. So I think it could be quite harmonious this time around. They're really getting to grips with the Williams car. And we'll see with these new regulations, they could really take to it.
I'm hoping. I think right now they're still a little bit overweight. But again, we don't know what teams are lying a little bit. This is my favourite, these kind of psychological...
I know. I always think it's like the Mourinho effect of Formula One when it comes to this. I think there is a lot of games and I wouldn't take testing too seriously either.
No. And well, listen, we can chat to Rebecca Clancy now and ask her how she's taking testing, what lessons she's taking from it and what we can look forward to with this new regulations and this new era for Formula One. We are delighted now to be joined on the line by F1 journalist and co-host of Inside the Piranha Club, Rebecca Clancy, to look ahead to a whole new era of Formula One beginning this weekend in Australia.
Hi, how are you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Hi, thank you so much for joining us. First of all, I guess, how are you? Are you excited for the new season?
Yes, I think it's going to be absolutely amazing. I mean, there are so many talking points. I can't say I feel particularly refreshed. It's not been a very long winter. It feels like we only just finished the last season and now we're going again. But yeah, I just think there's so much to get into, isn't there?
Definitely. I mean, Bernie Collins has said, and I thought this quote was, it kind of blew my mind slightly. She said that this is the biggest regulation overhaul we've ever had in F1. I was talking last week to Patrick Harding, who's Alex Albon's performance coach, and he said Alex Albon himself would echo that sentiment. Is this something that you're hearing across the paddock?
It's absolutely right. And the reason for that is because it's such a comprehensive regulation change. So for the first time ever, the regulations around the chassis, the engine, and the tyres and the fuel have all changed for the 2026 season. We've never seen that before. We've had big engine change in 2014 when they brought in the hybrid engines. 2017, we had Just Aero. So this is really the first time that we're having it all wrapped up into one, which is why it's such a big talking point ahead of the season.
And with these whole new regulations, I know that Kira specifically wanted to ask about what this is going to be like for drivers.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when we look at, like, Lewis Hamilton, for example, has been through all of these regulation changes in the past. Do we think when we see this massive shakeup and overhaul, will it have more of an impact on, do you think the older drivers might be more used to these big changes and be able to get into the headspace of these new regulations better? Or do you think the newer drivers who perhaps still getting used to what they're already experiencing, they might be able to adapt quicker? Do you think it will benefit a particular cohort perhaps more so?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really interesting question. And I think when we were heard from the drivers at testing, you know, the drivers aren't shy in coming forward with their opinions, are they? Some drivers absolutely loved it, like Lewis Hamilton, as you mentioned. Some drivers thought it was like Formula E on steroids, which is Max Verstappen said that. So I think there will be a real mix on how drivers get to grips with these cars. They are incredibly complicated. We have things like overtake, aero, boost, all of this kind of tricks and tools on the car that the drivers are going to have to get used to. Yes, you're right. You know, the older drivers, Alonso, obviously the oldest on the grid at 44 years now, they've been through a few of these reg changes. I think because these guys are such professionals and because they are, you know, they are the very best at what they do, 22 drivers now on the grid, I think they'll be okay, be it, you know, we've only got one rookie this year in Arvid Lindblad, but I think they'll all be okay with getting to grips with the car. We've had, you know, that's one of the reasons we had all this extra testing. Normally we only have 3 days of testing, but we've had the week in Barcelona, which was actually called a shakedown, but for all intents and purposes, it was a testing. And then we had those two tests in Bahrain, which totaled 6 days. And that's why we had the extra days for the drivers and the teams and the engine manufacturers could all get used to it. So I think they'll be okay on that front.
Speaking of the testing, it's very easy to take conclusions from it. It's also very easy to be very cynical and say you can't trust anything from testing. But it seems like teams like Mercedes and Ferrari, at least initially, have figured out their power units, have figured out their aerodynamics, and that teams like Aston Martin and maybe even Williams are struggling a little bit more. Is that sort of what you're expecting to see coming into Australia this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely err on the side of cynical when it comes to testing. Everyone's favourite word is sandbagging, meaning, you know, we don't know anything, actually. We don't know what engine modes they're running. We don't know what fuel they're running. We don't know what programs they're running. That's why people say you can't take too much from testing. But yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, Aston Martin have had an absolute shocker. They have paid a lot of money to hire the greatest F1 car designer possibly ever in Adrian Newey. He's gone over there. He joined last March. He didn't really focus on the 2025 car because he was focusing on the 2026 car. He's now come out and said, well, I'm still a few months behind because the regs came out in January, but I was on gardening leave from Red Bull, so we're behind on that front. They have a new engine partner in Honda who have come back into the sport. They were incredibly successful very recently with Red Bull. They won those championships from 21 in terms of the drivers with Max Verstappen and then the constructors for a few years after. But it has been an absolute mess for Aston Martin. They conked out at the end of the pit lane, only a few laps into testing. They didn't really take part. The Honda engine is said to be miles behind where it should be. We've had a management shakeup. Adrian Newey is now team principal. Andy Cowell, who was the CEO and team principal, he's been shipped off to Japan, basically, to work with Honda. He was the architect of that amazing Mercedes 2014 engine, the brakes I spoke about earlier. But they are miles behind where they should be, and I suspect miles behind where their billionaire owner, Lawrence Stroll, would like them to be. He looked like he had swallowed a wasp in the paddock. He was not a happy man. But then at the other end of the grid, we have the likes of Mercedes, who are absolutely the favourite for this season. They are obviously downplaying it, as you would expect from them. And alongside them, we have Ferrari. And I think those two going into Australia this weekend, they are really who everyone is looking at. And again, testing is tricky because, you know, we don't know what they're running at. But in terms of top speed, they were the two fastest teams. And in terms of the long runs, or what we can ascertain from the long runs of what we saw, Mercedes were the quickest. And Mercedes have George Russell behind the wheel, who is an incredibly talented driver. He was the F3 champion, F2 champion, beating Lando Norris in those series. He is absolutely excellent. And I think if Mercedes can give him a potentially championship winning car, there's no reason Russell couldn't go away and, you know, win the championship. And then obviously, there's the controversy around Mercedes. So do we want to talk about compression ratios? I think by goodness me, I've never known such a boring topic to cause so much controversy. Very quickly, compression ratios are, it's about the engine materials within it and how they expand. It's 16 to 1. It's lower than it has been because it makes it more sustainable. The engines are tested when they're cold, not when they're hot. And Mercedes have basically, apparently, found a way to get more power output effectively when the engines are hot, when they're not tested. So we've already had their rivals complaining, their engine manufacturer rivals complaining. We've already had a regulation change last weekend from the FIA, the governing body, because the rivals shouted loudest and they got what they wanted. So after 7 races, the engines will be tested when they're hot as well. And then from next year, they'll only be tested when they're hot. I hope you're still keeping up and you're still here. But it's so confusing. And this is so Formula One, changing the regs before they've even, you know, got to the first race. But yes, so lots of controversy around Mercedes, but still certainly the favourites.
It is, because when you look at the new engine regulations, I mean, it's looking like a 50-50 split between combustion and electrical power. We're losing the MGUH. It's all about kinetic now. At the internal combustion engine, the power is reduced. And for me, Formula One is always about trying to find and exploit these little loopholes. I'm kind of loving that Mercedes had a bit of a kind of a brainwave and are hopefully maybe going to get a bit of an advantage from it. It reminds me a bit of the double diffuser back in 2009. Just getting extracting as much as you can from what you're given. And I wanted to ask about what this all means, is that we're saying goodbye to the ground effect era. That downforce is not really going to be as big a deal as big a factor now in these races. How will this affect specifically Australia? We're looking at Albert Park, which is a temporary street circuit. Is this kind of an ideal place to begin this new era?
I mean, in terms of one of the greatest cities in the world, yes, absolutely. In terms of downforce, no, it's got very fast straights. What it effectively means is not having the ground effect cars anymore, which Lewis Hamilton will be utterly delighted about because he hated those cars. You have less downforce, which put simply means you have less grip. So going around the corners, they'll have less grip. So what a lot of the comments have been from the drivers is it actually comes down to the skill of the driver and how they can manage it. And, you know, we talk within F1 a lot about the feel of the car, how the F1 drivers feel about the car. And I think that is going to come to play quite a lot. You know, there've been some comments as well from the drivers about best will really shine. We will really... It's that never-ending question, is it? How much is man? How much is machine? We'll never really know the answer. But I think with these cars, it will be more about the driver. That reduction in grip, I think, is just a case of getting used to it, to be honest. I think with Australia, it's not the most complicated track. And not wanting to downplay the first race of the season, particularly if you're planning to get up at 4 a.m. to watch it, it's not always the most exciting race. It doesn't lend itself to overtakes, but... that is part of the reason we've done these regulation changes, that you have the overtake button. You mentioned about the engines, the 50-50 split. So it, depending on if you've got your battery charged, which happens through the corners, and the car in front of you is running empty on their battery at that moment, you know, we could see a lot of overtakes. And so goodbye DRS. Everyone hated DRS when it first came in, but actually by the end of it, we were quite grateful, or else we wouldn't have seen many overtakes. This is... gimmick, if you want to use that word. It's just another kind of form of gimmick. But I think it will lead to good racing. And I think for somewhere like Albert Park in Melbourne, where it hasn't always been great, I think it'll be interesting to see if it lives up to what we've been told that these cars are supposed to do and improve the racing.
And actually, Rebecca, do you think with these new buttons, boost, overtake, recharge, are we going to see a lot more autonomy then in the hands of the drivers? Will they be able to kind of carve out their own strategy in the car during the race? And do you think in particular, because when I think of botched strategy plans, I do think Ferrari. And now that Ferrari is kind of back in that talking space of a lot of hype around, a lot of people are looking at Charles and Lewis, do you think that we could be seeing drivers really taking a hold of their own kind of destiny in the car now with these new buttons?
I mean, not if they want their wages paid. It'll still very much come from the pit wall and their strategy team, and the pre-race meetings that they'll have, and the debriefs after the Friday testing, and even quali will be all about finding out. So practice on Friday will be so important in Albert Park, because what they're going to be trying to do is finding out where to charge the battery, where an overtake could work, where to deploy, where to press all these buttons. And the engineers will have gone through all of the data. They'll have combed through all of it. They will then listen to the driver's feedback, and they will put together a strategy. And it's interesting you mentioned about Ferrari. I definitely do not disagree with you. They have had many problems. And I think with Ferrari, what is really interesting is that relationship between driver and their race engineer is going to be so important this year. Lewis Hamilton still doesn't have a race engineer that we have been told about. So he obviously moved to Ferrari last year. He didn't really get on with his race engineer, as you could hear over the radio. He had Bono, as we all know, and Pete Bonington at Mercedes for his entire time at Mercedes, a very successful partnership. Hamilton was actually spotted in the Mercedes hospitality, catching up with Bono. And we still don't know who he's going to have in his ear during races. And I think that's not great for Hamilton. He's actually been speaking about it, saying, it's not ideal, because that relationship is going to be so important with all of these gizmos and gadgets and gimmicks that we've got this year. We're waiting to hear from Ferrari. Hopefully they haven't messed up before the season even has started.
I want to mention what everyone's been talking about, which is that Ferrari rear wing, the 180 degree turn that you can... I saw the clip of it for the first time, and similar to Olli Behrman, I think his reaction was, I thought something had broken in the Ferrari car. Now, if people are, you know, I think James Vowles said about it, you know, when something this dramatic is put out, it usually means everyone's thought about it and decided against it. But at the same time, it could be something. It could be a stroke of genius. What are people saying about this rear wing?
Do you know what? This rear wing is so funny, because to put it into context, Ferrari only ran it for one lap in the whole 6 days of testing in Bahrain. But it has obviously picked up loads of traction. Everyone saw it in the paddock. It was incredibly interesting. They never ran it again, so obviously they just. They literally did one lap, car came into the garage, and they changed out the rear wing. Like you were saying earlier, I love the innovation. I love the loopholes, which are perfectly legal, by the way. What Mercedes are doing with their engine is perfectly legal. The teams work very closely with the FIA and their development, constantly saying, can we do this? Can we do this? Can we do this? You're right, again, like with the Braun, they had, what's it, Jenson Button won six of the first seven races. Mercedes have got seven races to, you know, take advantage of what they've found in this loophole. It was enough for Braun. Could it be enough for Mercedes? Will Ferrari turn up with this 180 rear wing? I mean, we don't know. The problem with Albert Park is that it's actually not the ideal place for the first race of the season, in the sense of teams are obviously based in Europe predominantly. Seven of the 11 have their main bases here, and then the other teams, a lot of them have satellites, including Cadillac, who are obviously coming in. And you can't just ship over parts easily to Australia. I mean, you can this week, obviously, what's going on with the Middle East, the travel disruption has been quite something. So even if you wanted to get a part out there, you can't. If something goes wrong, if you want to trial something in Friday practice, it's not the place to do it. So it will prove a bit tricky, but it'll be interesting to see what cars they turn up with, because what we saw in testing isn't the car they're going to be bringing to Australia.
And speaking of kind of Friday practices and practice sessions being more important than ever, maybe as drivers get used to these regulations, as the race engineers get used to this, and as teams try to determine their strategy, we're having less practice sessions than ever before now in this season, with more sprint races. The first one being in China, which is the second race of the season. Is this something that is? Are teams going to be frustrated by this? Because I think some fans love them, some fans find them frustrating.
Yeah.
But I must imagine strategists at the F1 teams are frustrated most of all.
If teams had it their way, they would test day and night, every day of the week, for every day of the year. They would, you know, they just want as much data as humanly possible. Me personally, I want as little testing practice as possible, because the weekends that we see the sprint races that you mentioned, we've got six this year, although there's already chatter about going up to 12. It reduces practice down to one session on the Friday morning, and then you go straight into the sprint quali in Friday afternoon. Sprint race on Saturday morning replaces the third practice. And it just throws everything on its head, because you get to these tracks, the teams have to rely on the data that they've got from their wind tunnels and the sims that they have back at their factories. And they just don't have as much data for the setup of the car as they would like. The drivers don't necessarily get the feel for the braking points, or, you know, particularly the younger ones who haven't done it. Like Lewis Hamilton's in his 20th season, so he's probably fine. But, you know, they don't have that feel. But I think you only need to look back at the few years that the sprint races have been introduced. Those races on a Sunday, by the time we get there, they're usually carnage, because they just don't have the data that they would like. And there was always that fear, wasn't there, when the sprint races first came in, that, oh, you know, what happens on a Saturday, just, you know, it's spoiler alert for what's going to happen on Sunday. But actually, that hasn't been the case at all. So less practice, less testing, let them just get on with it.
I also want to take it back to Australia, which is going to be Oscar Piastri's home race. There hasn't been a lot of talk around McLaren. There hasn't been a real buzz around Lando off the back of the championship win, or Oscar, who very nearly cinched it himself alongside Max. What do we think we're going to expect from the whole papaya rules this season? Do you think it's going to be contested between the two guys? And do you think that McLaren's kind of, why aren't they in this big hype up so far in the lead up to the season?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I found it fascinating as well, with McLaren not really being talked about. It's all about Mercedes and Ferrari, surprisingly. But McLaren, I think, have done a very good job of going under the radar. They haven't really been making much noise. Every time Lando Norris speaks, he's literally still can't believe that he's the world champion. He's just so happy. He said, if you ever see me not smiling, you can punch me. You know, he's just, honestly, he's on cloud nine right now. And you're right about Oscar Piastri. He basically disappeared over the winter, which I can hardly blame him, given how brutal it was last year for him. He was leading coming into the second half of the season, the championship, and then it was a hard watch for anyone who was, he just lost it mentally. His racecraft went, he was making mistakes. It was hard, you know, his first championship battle, and it didn't work out for him. So, you know, he'll have gone away, he'll have regrouped. He's slightly changed the people around him. So Mark Webber is still his manager, but he said he's going to be at fewer races this year. He's just working out what he needs from race weekends and how he manages that. And I think that's a very good move. He's coming into his fourth season now, so he's got quite a lot of experience under him. Australian has never won the Australian Grand Prix. He will absolutely be looking to change that. But with McLaren, I think they have that Mercedes engine in the back of the car. And we've talked about that Mercedes engine. It will do well. their aero department tends to be very good, very, very good. So if they can put together a strong car, which I think they have, I think there was a lot of sandbagging from them in testing. I think they will be in the hunt. And I think with the likes of Norris and Piastri behind the wheel, both very experienced, obviously the reigning world champion, I think they will definitely be in the mix. But you're right, definitely going under the radar.
We were saying as well earlier, Max Verstappen's barely been mentioned in this lead-up as well. Another massive surprise, given that he also almost threatened Lando Norris, you know, right at the end there last season, taking the championship. Do you think that he's raring to go, or do you think he's kind of just letting, you know, getting swallowed up by all the momentum towards the likes of Mercedes, Ferrari, or do you think he, again, he's one that we obviously have to watch?
Always watch Max Verstappen. I mean, there is so much hyperbole about Max Verstappen, and all of it is correct. He really, truly is one of the greatest F1 drivers ever, certainly the best of his generation. Red Bull could give him a dog of a car and he would still probably be able to win races. He is just absolutely exceptional at what he does. The thing with Red Bull is that they have a new engine partner in Ford. Ford are coming back into the sport. Which is obviously very exciting for Red Bull. They did a big car launch over in Detroit. And while obviously the badging is Ford, it's actually Red Bull Powertrains, not imaginatively named at all. But they have been developing and working in their factory back in Milton Keynes, where they're based. And Red Bull did a really good job a couple of years ago of basically going to the teams and stealing all the best engine people. And they've been working on the Red Bull Powertrains with Ford as well. And it's not quite where they want it to be. Red Bull were very open last year and saying, look, we're a bit behind, development's not quite where we want it to be. But with Max Verstappen, he will be loving being the underdog. I spoke to him in Abu Dhabi after he lost out on the championship by 2 points, which is utterly incredible given where he was, 102, 101 points behind it going into the second half of the season. And he genuinely was okay. You know, you'd think top athletes obviously want to win the world championship, including him. But he was like, look, don't worry about it. It's all right. I've got my four titles. I've had a great season. No one expected me to be here. It is what it is. I've had a lot of fun. I've driven a great race and some great races. I've driven this car, which I haven't particularly enjoyed. So I think with Max Verstappen, to discount him at your own peril, because he is just utterly brilliant. And I don't think Red Bull, given the testing times that we can see and, you know, what we can take from it, I think he will be up there. He doesn't need the best car on the grid to win races. And that's what's so scary about him for his rivals.
And I think just we're talking obviously about these teams who are kind of vying at the top. We mentioned Aston Martin, who are really looking like they're going to struggle if they can even get a full race done in Australia this weekend. But we have this big question mark about Cadillac. I think people with the new regulations, I think it's gone kind of flown under the radar that we now have an 11th team and we once again have 22 drivers on the grid. Obviously changing qualifying. We have 6 drivers going to be knocked out of Q1 and Q2 now. But where I suppose do Cadillac want to be on Sunday? Because they've been preparing for their entry into F1 for quite a long time. They have a very experienced driver lineup. What's a good weekend for Cadillac?
Honestly, I think just being on the grid on Sunday is where they want to be. They have spent the whole of the last year telling anyone who'll listen not to expect anything, that they expect to be at the back of the grid. As you mentioned, they've got Valtteri Bottas and Sergio Perez, both incredibly experienced drivers. And they were hired so that Cadillac don't have to think about the drivers. They don't want to worry about a rookie. They just want them to be able to get on with the job and, you know, be left to it. So I think Cadillac will just be happy to be in the paddock. Obviously, it took a while to get that team entry signed off, and it was a couple of iterations. It was initially Andretti. And so I think don't expect too much. However, they have employed very good people. So I wouldn't be surprised if they actually weren't plumb last. I mean, I don't know who will be plumb last because the back of the grid is a bit of unknown, let's say. But I think for Cadillac, if they can finish the race and with that, all of the data that comes so that they can keep building, because I think with this season, what we're going to see, particularly with this regulation change, it's going to be more of a development race than ever. And it already is an F1. But I think if Cadillac can just have the reliability, I think that will be really important for them. Because I think, you only have to look as we mentioned about Aston Martin and that wild story that they're already deliberately planning to retire their cars early in the race. So I think if they can just get to the checkered flag, that will be a good result for Cadillac.
And I think it's something that I'm obviously it seems silly and trite to say that I'm excited for this race on Sunday, but like it's the first time in a long time we have this many regulation changes. And one of the things I'm most excited to hope for is a few more overtakes. I mean, the cars are narrower, the tires are narrower. When we get to different street circuits, I mean, we're thinking mainly of Monaco, perhaps. Was this all done with overtaking in mind?
I would love to say yes, but no. but certainly it was a factor. These cars are far more nimble. They're lighter, which the drivers have been calling for a long time, because when they're lighter, you can basically throw them around. I mean, these guys just want to get into go-karts and go racing. That would be their dream, if the go-karts could go up to 100 miles an hour. But yes, certainly with the overtakes, that was very much a thought. And one of the reasons that it's changed is because the old cars, the ground effect cars, they used to create this basically effectively turbulence behind them. And so a car behind couldn't get closer. And so these aero reg changes have got rid of that turbulence, or hopefully got rid of that turbulence enough that the car behind doesn't need to be so much faster to do the overtake. And then obviously, as we mentioned, they've got all these gimmicks to help them, battery deployment, the overtake button. So yes, it should be better in terms of the overtake. But the reason I said no is because it was mostly to do with the engines and attracting these new car manufacturers. And that was the kind of primary drive.
I'm trying to figure out what this recharge is going to look like, this recharge period. I know it's part of the button. So if you want to do the boost or the overtake, it will start to hamper the battery. Will it potentially take away from the action if drivers are having to do this kind of recharge period? Like, what will that look like? Do we know?
Yeah, and it won't just be during the race. It could be an issue during qualifying. And a lot of the drivers have actually come out and said in testing, I think I'm going to have to lift at times during a qualifying lap when it should be 100% foot to the floor. They're going to have to lift because, as we mentioned, you're charging through the corners. You have to lift slightly to charge the battery. So yes, I think this will be part of the tactics and the strategy that they come up with before the race as to where is the best place to lift to deploy your battery. I think there will be, during the race, obviously things will change as and when if you're coming under attack from a car behind you, or if you're trying to challenge in front. I think there has to be some flexibility there. But yeah, I have no idea. The drivers have no idea. It's they're not particularly happy about it. And I think it will be a real shame, particularly in qualifying, if they aren't flat out.
So I think, speaking of qualifying, obviously it's going to be Saturday. It's the first of this whole new era. And then looking at the race as well, can I ask you for maybe a top three prediction? Is that too up in the air right now, just as a kind of final question?
No, not at all. I think it'll be fascinating. You mentioned about the Ferrari rear wing. I think if anyone saw the other clip that went mad from Ferrari, it was Lewis Hamilton's start, where I think he was, because they were doing practice starts, because F1 have been trialing a new starting system. So at the end of each day in testing, the drivers, they all lined up on the grid as if it was a race start and then did a practice start. And there was a clip that emerged of Lewis Hamilton, I think it was about 10th on the grid or something, had the most phenomenal start. And by the second corner, he was leading quite comfortably. And I think George Russell came out and said, oh my goodness, what was that from Lewis Hamilton? Utterly amazing. So if Ferrari really have developed a good car, and it does look like it, and they have somehow worked out how to have these incredible starts, because that's what George Russell is complaining about, I think the order on Saturday, which has often dictated the order on Sunday, as in the results, I don't think they will correlate as much this year, or certainly that's the hope. So yes, okay, I'll give you my top three. I think qualifying will get Charles Leclerc. I think he is massively, massively underrated in terms of how fast he is over one lap. And I know his whole lap to win ratio is terrible, but I think that says more about how good he is on a Saturday rather than how good he is on a Sunday. So I'm going to say Charles Leclerc in that Ferrari. I'm going to say Lewis Hamilton and then George Russell for the top three qualifiers. Race day, I am going to say the result will be George Russell, Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen.
Ooh. That's giving 2020 kind of energy, 2021. Like, that's very exciting.
It's, I think that's what I'd love to see most, is a real disparity between who's coming top three on a Saturday and who's coming top three on a Sunday. That would be, that would make for an exciting yeah. F1 season. Rebecca?
I think the great thing about going into a season like this is that we have no idea. So it is genuinely really, really exciting.
Perfect. Listen, Rebecca, thank you so much for chatting to us today. This has been incredibly informative, and I hope you enjoy the weekend.
I will. I'm not at 4 a.m, but I will.
It was a pleasure chatting to you. Thank you very much. That was such an interesting discussion.
It really was.
Such a great time. And we were going to leave, but now I need to give my predictions.
Please.
For the top three in qualifying, the top three in the race. I want yours as well, just to see which of us gets, I suppose, which of us gets closest.
Yeah. Okay.
Qualifying, I'm in a similar vein to Rebecca. I do think Ferrari are going to have a mega qualifying.
Okay. Yeah, I agree.
I'm saying Charles Leclerc first.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying George Russell second, but I'm saying Max Verstappen third.
Okay. I think it's going to be number one, Max.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, we really are counting him out, I feel. And then I think it's going to be George, then Lando.
Okay, and then literally we're in quick fire for the race. I think it's going to be, Oscar Piastri first home win. I think it's going to be Charles Leclerc in second and George Russell in third. There's going to be some chaos.
Okay, I'm going to go George 1, Max 2, and then Lando 3.
Perfect. And listen, everybody who's listening, if you want to hear how wrong we are or how right we are, you can tune in, you can listen to us every Wednesday of race week. Starting next week for the entirety of the Formula One season, as the F1 pod is coming to Off the Ball, thanks to our sponsor KitKat. We're incredibly excited to get underway, and we'll have more details for you soon. But this is not going to be the last time you're hearing from us throughout the season, and we want to hear from you as well. It's almost time for Lights Out and Away We Go, and I'm very excited.
I'm even more excited. I didn't know that was possible.
Thank you, Kira, and we'll chat to you soon.
Thank you.
Off the Ball Daily.